Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
The Republic of Ireland midfielder Jeff Hendrick may have been feeling like a bit of a wally on Saturday night, having committed an unsportsmanlike act only to screw up the chance that resulted from this act. It's a moment we deal with in detail in today's football podcast, but I highlight it now just to illustrate that no matter how bad a mistake you make in a sporting contest, there's always somebody somewhere making a more embarrassing mistake than you. That's the beauty of sport after all. It's why we all got into it in the first place. Just to feel slightly less humiliated than some other person somewhere else. Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast. Hi, Murph. Hi, Ken.
Hey there, Owen.
That other person in this scenario, you know who I'm talking about, Murph. Fullback Freddie Burns.
Yeah.
Has to be. His team.
Wasn't a good weekend.
Oh, not a good weekend for Freddie Burns. Actually scored a try earlier in the game, which nobody
No one's talking about that, though.
Watching it live, his team found themselves 2 points down at home to Toulouse late on in the first round of the European Champions Cup. On Saturday afternoon, this is the match you pointed out last week, Ciarán, that would be available to Irish audiences on not one but two terrestrial TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that people at Channel 4 and Virgin Media were onto something with this
one
as
their
opener.
They know a lot more about it than I do, obviously, Owen.
Yeah.
We can look forward to five more absolutely ridiculous games, including matters of a personal nature which will deeply affect the person involved weeks afterwards.
So 2 points down, Freddie Burns misses a simple kick in front of goal that would have given his team the lead. No matter, because moments later he bursts through the Toulouse defence and saunters over the line, blowing a kiss to the crowd, tapping his chest in celebration. All that remains is just to dot the ball down and actually, you know, score the try.
Through this time, oh there it is, Freddie Burns, a kiss and the score.
The kick and he's missed the try, has he? Maxi Medar was in there with a boot to disrupt.
He wants that dead ball area to open up and swallow him whole if he's missed that.
What has he done? He's celebrating, he's smiling, he's kissing. Medar is there. Oh, that's great work from Medar.
Brilliant work.
Oh,
it's just... Oh, no.
Just put it down.
I don't care who you support, that is brutal.
Save the celebrations for after.
He's screaming into the ground, open up, let me in. Oh, Freddie.
Oof, that's how they call it in BT Sport. And with that, realistically, probably go back to European hopes. They've got Leinster firing on all cylinders in the pool. They've got to go away to Toulouse.
That was a home game, obviously, for Bath. That's not great.
You okay, Ken? You look like you've got a face of consternation. Are you feeling sorry for Freddie Burns?
No, I wasn't feeling sorry for him at all. Why didn't you just touch the ball down?
It's a fair question.
I didn't understand what he was doing.
A little bit of... I don't think it was showboating, according to Burns and the Burns family. I heard his brother being interviewed on RT Sport, who plays for Ulster, and said, no, he's just, you know, he's an expressive guy on the field, and he was just caught up in the moment. It wasn't anything. He wasn't trying to show off or anything.
He's a tulip.
Well, like I said, though, Ken, there's always someone else somewhere else doing something even more stupid. I just hope Freddie Burns is watching the Denver Broncos versus the LA Rams yesterday, late in the first quarter. The Broncos produced this moment, which I noticed Deadspin reporting.
And going deep this time, and the
catch is made for the touchdown to Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah, that's all well and good. Emmanuel Sanders then gets right in the face of the defender, taunting him for his inability to stop the touchdown. Except it wasn't a touchdown after all. Sanders was ruled down at the 1 yard line. A penalty was given against him for taunting. That penalty cost the Broncos 15 yards. They failed to make those yards up, ended up having to settle for a field goal, 3 points instead of seven. Guess what they ended up losing the game by?
3 points.
3 points is correct, Murph. A deficit that would have been ruled out if Sanders had been able to keep it shut. They presumably would have finished off the touchdown then from just 1 yard out. Okay, that's actually not as embarrassing.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I was just trying to give him something to cling to here. He's been getting slaughtered for the last 48 hours. We're going to bring it up again with Jerry Thornley and James Collin.
Don't mock the sporting gods. That's the rule of the weekend.
That is the rule of the weekend, yeah.
I hate to
see that go unpunished.
You're a sticker for that, Simon. There's literally
always,
nothing.
Always happened.
I mean, I did see you mention it. You know, Freddie should take solace. You know, it's happened before. And then one of the names was Will Carling. So I was like, so what you're saying is in 25 years, we'll still be talking about Freddie Burns. That's not a
There's
massive
the
degree Leguizamon
one where he's diving, he's mid-air, like doing the kind of ash splash.
Yes,
and as he goes to put the hand down, oh no, he's mid-air and the ball falls out of his hand. So you need one every sort of 4 or 5 years, then everybody forgets about it and then a player does it again.
And then it comes back up.
Yep.
This will Freddie Burns will come up in 5 years' time when we talk about somebody else doing something along these lines. If you're not a World Service member yet, and these Monday podcasts are your only Second Captain's Pods of the week, and you notice that there's a little bit of broadcasting joy that seems to have disappeared from your life, well, you're probably right. That's because you haven't heard US Murph in quite a while. He was in flying form last week, talking about the Boston Red Sox losing a famous game to the New York Yankees back in 1978.
At the time, on a personal note, I happened to be a huge Red Sox fan in 1978. To the point where I got an autographed picture of Carl Yastrzemski for my 11th birthday in September of 78. I was so excited. My parents had written to the Red Sox and said, we have the biggest Red Sox fan in all of Mill Valley, California. They wrote to my favorite player, Fred Lynn. He did not write back. They wrote to Jim Rice. He did not write back. And they wrote to the legend, Carl Yastrzemski, and he wrote back. He sent back a picture. Best wishes, Brian, Carl Yastrzemski. He coincidentally fouled out to end the game. First and third, 5-4 ball game, ninth inning. I came running home from school, short of breath. My mom said, the game is on. I ran downstairs because it was during the day, and Yastrzemski popped up to third base. Greg Nettles, I can still see it right now. He caught it. Tragedy. Yankees are dancing around in the shadows of Fenway Park, those October shadows, so memorable. And I remember my dad took me in that night. Famous Murphy family story. And I said, boo, Carl Yastrzemski. And my dad turned on the light, came in the room, and took the picture off my wall. And started walking out of my house, walking down the hallway, and I was in tears. I ran after my dad, and he said, you are either going to appreciate what somebody did for you out of kindness and stick with them through thick and thin, or you're not going to earn this photo. And I was like, oh, my God. So I was begging hands and knees to forgive. It's okay. Carl Yastrzemski tried, so we got the picture back on the wall. I still have the picture, guys.
Life lessons with US Murph, all yours for 5
Boo, Carl Yastrzemski. I can actually see 11-year-old Brian Murphy saying those words as well. Boo, Carl Yastrzemski.
Poor Brian, his memory's so foggy from 1978.
I know, yeah. Just fragments now.
Brian will be talking NBA this week as the most famous player in the sport. LeBron James gets set to make his competitive debut for the most famous team in the sport, the LA Lakers. If you're interested in signing up, you can do it on secondcaptains.com. Now, two convincing wins and a hard-fought away draw made for a pretty decent return on the opening weekend of the Champions Cup. Jerry, thanks very much for making it in.
Pleasure.
And we're joined today by the ex-Munster man, now Academy Director at Pau in France, James Collin. James, how's the form?
Yeah, very good.
Good. Pretty good. Now, how are you getting on? You obviously finished your career there and you're cutting your teeth in the coaching game.
Yeah, it's the second season now, so I'm responsible for all the sporting side of the centre formation. And it's 2 years at the Espoirs, so the Espoirs are the equivalent of our A team at home, I suppose. So we got to the final last year, beaten by Claremont, and we're 4 games in now, so 2 wins, 2 lost. So trying to get ourselves going again. So it's all good.
Good to hear. Now, Munster were the only Irish team not to win, but in some ways, you could argue, was the most impressive result of the weekend. I don't know how you're thinking about it now. Obviously, there were try-scoring opportunities, but you would have thought in advance going away and getting that result they would have been happy enough with.
Yeah, I watched Exeter against Bath. I think it was the week before they played Bath away. They were really, really good. They were very patient. put Pat under a lot of pressure. Set piece, their maul was excellent, and then they put on the gas for the last 20 minutes and got a bonus point victory away. So I think when the lads would have watched that, they would have been saying a defensive bonus point would be a good result for them to take home. But yeah, I'll be honest with you, it was a tough watch. I watched the telly and put Michael Corcoran on the background because yeah, at least it sounded a bit exciting. But with the weather conditions, it was a tough old slog. It was good, honest work. Both sides worked really well. But I think the lads would be very happy with 2 points. It was a good start. Pick up 2 points away from home is always a good start to the campaign, you know.
Well, it's funny, Jerry, on the entertainment value. I heard some people saying it was a great game. It depends. James obviously wants the champagne rugby there, but
I think it was one of those games, one of those arm wrestles that if you were at it, you enjoyed it that bit more. You know, it was one of those games to be at, to actually hear the tomahawk cries, to be part of the atmosphere there, to appreciate the wind. And you know, even Peter Armani and Rob Baxter and Johan van Graan afterwards saying, look, even from the press box, you can't tell how bad that wind was, folks. That was something else. So I think it was absorbing, all the more absorbing if you were at it. I think in many respects it's one of the three best results of the weekend for sure. Ronan O'Gara said beforehand if Munster won, that would be the win of the weekend. So I think to get the draw is obviously the next best thing. It showed the value of their new signings, how much Tadhg Byrne is bringing to them, really massive addition to the squad. Joey Carby, you know, still only 22, playing his fifth game in a row at out of half, more than he played in the whole of last season, the position. I thought he did really well. Thankfully, that 22 game end phase drive at the end didn't result in a winning score for Exeter, because then it might have fallen in his lap a bit.
Just got to say, that's what we'd be talking about.
Yeah,
now.
But it was his only mistake, and otherwise very polished performance. And you know, he is only 22, and he's getting better, and he's adding more to their attacking game, even though they cut the cloth to suit their measure in Sandy Park, and I thought tactically adapted the conditions very well. They might have escaped with a win even, but I think all in all a draw, when you think in all likelihood that gives them every chance of still being involved come round six when they host Exeter, and will therefore maybe only have to beat Exeter by a point at Thomond Park at 5:30 on the last Saturday of the pool stages at tea time in Thomond Park. I couldn't be more set up for any better than that. And I think also, you know, it just, you got to give credit in a weekend where there have been unsung heroes making last ditch tackles that have mattered maybe 2, 3, 4 points on an actual table. You think of Maxime Medar, obviously, and Freddie Burns, which I'm sure we'll come on to. There was a brilliant covering tackle in Louis Picquemot by one of the Edinburgh subs that preserved a bonus point for Edinburgh and denied Montpellier one. That's a 2 point swing. And then Duncan Williams, obviously, in Thomond Park, that double tackle covering back, you know, I mean. Everybody wanted Conor Murray to be fit and well, and everybody kind of sighed when Albie Mathieson was declared unfit, but Duncan Williams was, you know, in many ways the unsung hero of the effort too.
Yeah, James, just in terms of the overall context for Munster and for Carberry and Duncan Williams in particular, it was a sort of day neither of them style-wise would have enjoyed. They're a new partnership. Obviously, Munster are down to the bare bones at scrum half. And yet, I think Munster are the only province that sort of make a mockery of what you think the narrative should be. So when that Carberry kick goes long, it's a bit of an error, it's also just a bit of bad luck. It sort of feels like, oh, that's going to be the headline, they're definitely going to concede a try. But Munster sort of seemed to be able to block out that sense of dread that other teams would feel in a moment like that and just battle their way through it. And the same way with going down to what you might say is their third choice, maybe even fourth choice scrum half on a windy, horrible day with a new out half outside them, that's also going to be the thing that's going to ruin their chances. And yet, Munster just seem to find a way to make those things irrelevant.
Yeah, I think the dread is a good word, because they would have been dreading leaving Joey, let that fall on Joey's head there. So, like, it's funny that you say, oh, other teams will be dreading. That dread is sometimes what drives you. So that fear of, Christ, we're not going to let Joey be the one to take it here, lads. We'll keep going. We'll keep digging in. I really don't agree with Duncan being their third or fourth choice scrum half. I think he's probably the most experienced scrum half in the country at the moment. I think he's been there. He's done that every time. Every time Connor goes down, oh God, it's Duncan, and he always does the job. He is always present. He's always there. He's always giving everything for the team. Look, he's not Conor Murray, but you're comparing him with the best scrum half in the world, bar none. And to have that, okay, there's going to be a difference when Conor isn't playing, but Duncan always steps up, especially in big games away from home, as you said, covering tackle to effectively get 2 points out of the game. That, you know, these things, when, as Jerry said, when you go down to the last day of the season, it's these small little things that will give you the opportunity whether you're going to be in a fighting chance to qualify, or that you're sitting there to play in the challenge to see whether you'll be playing Challenge Cup in the quarterfinal or semi final afterwards. You know, so I think the lads dug in really, really well for that last passage of play. But I mean, they'll take a huge amount of confidence out of that. I think when you go back and do a review, the guys will be like, we're 22 phases, we're able to defend, we're able to keep a team like Exeter out, who have run over pretty much everybody else, and yet they're still standing there. They're still, as Jerry pointed to, I thought Byrne was brilliant again. He's a fantastic signing. He's been really, really good, and I think he's fit, he's gelled into the squad really well as well. When you see the guys around him, you know, patting him on the back for the turnovers, and he seems to be after fitting in really, really well. And I think he's been a big, big signing for Munster.
Yeah, we wanted to get you on partly to talk about Tadhg Byrne, because you were, I don't know if you were a late bloomer, but you came through an unusual route, essentially through the AIL, and then got your position with Munster. And Tadhg Byrne has, I don't know if rejected by Leinster is the right word, but loads of injuries, didn't make it at Leinster, then sort of had to prove himself. And now, a little bit later in his career, he's coming through as a top-class performer. I thought it was his best game for Munster by a mile. Can that be a strength for a player where you've just had to battle through your early 20s to make an impact?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a strength, but I mean, it gives you the experience. If not, you have a bit of life experience behind you. Because a lot of guys go through, and it's not that it's easy, but you go through the academy route, you go through, you're always the best of everything, you're always the best nutritionist, the best physical conditioners, you've the best gear, it's easy to get boots, it's easy to get the stuff left and right that, you know, other fellas, you know, take for granted. And Tadhg hasn't gone down that route. He's had to go and find his feet, and he's had to work really fighting tooth and nail to keep himself a professional rugby player. And I think with that, it shows he plays with a kind of a desperation that, you know, there's always, I think a lot of the time, I think a lot of journalists forget the insecurity of our jobs as professional sportsmen, is that there's always that insecurity. If I don't have a good game, there's 30 other fellas who quite happily will jump into my position. And I think that insecurity, it breeds desperation. And with desperation, you'll get the performances that you have. And that, you know, it's coming around. Tadhg isn't the one this year, but it's coming around to that time of the year where fellas are playing for contracts and playing for jobs. And, you know, the big performances and the big days there are what keep you in a job. And I think that kind of a desperation and that insecurity that Tadhg will carry with him, because it'll go with you, because he's been let go. He's been shown the door by somebody. He's had to go away and find himself. And I think that'll always be a driving force with him for his career, because I know that was what was a driving force for me anyway. So just speaking from my own personal experience of it.
Yeah. I presume as well you have to appraise yourself. You spend a lot more time thinking about yourself and your strengths and weaknesses. Mm. And if you are the type, then if you're the right sort of personality, you learn a bit more than a guy who's breezed through from school.
I don't know. I think sometimes it's funny. It's not that you become used to it, but you become accustomed to the fact that, you know, you mightn't play every week, so, or you mightn't get the contract, or you mightn't get the nod. So you go looking for the little things, the little details that are going to be able to, you're going to add on, because at that level, at the level Tadhg is playing at the moment, he's doing all the small things right. He's in a good body position over the ball, his jumping is good, his kickoff reception is good, all the big blocks of his game are good. But so then you can go back down to the little details, and you can go into the minute details, and that's the difference between the highest level, is that, you know, that attention to those small things, getting those really, really small details right, the position of your foot in the maul, the position of your arm in the melee and the scrum melee. God. But just when you're around, all those small things make a massive, massive difference. You know, having that willingness to go after the small details are what will add on to your career long term, you know.
Comfortable for, more than comfortable in the end for Leinster. Jerry, what little bit of skill were you most impressed by? The Sexton pass under the legs?
Or the furlong?
The furlong dummy and one-handed pass and a little bit of footwork. Devon Toner being involved in loop plays.
Yeah. So much to admire. I mean, I came away from that game giddy. I'd probably go with
The easiest questions are the hardest questions sometimes, Jerry.
It's very hard to choose between Sexton or Furlan. Yeah. Very true. I enjoyed them both so much. Like it was one of those games that it was great because we're under such severe difficulty deadline-wise in with a nighttime kickoff, 7:45 kickoff, that to have the result sewn up with 20 minutes ago.
That was good of Leinster.
It's very helpful of them. And then you could just really enjoy. And I very rarely come away from a game of rugby, certainly none this season, having enjoyed it so much. Right. It made me giddy. I was just excited just watching them. I mean, I think that they're playing a brand of rugby now that absolutely makes them deserving European champions, that they are the best team in Europe right now. The unfortunate thing being that it's only October and still another 7 months to go in the season, and so much can go wrong. An injury to Luke McGrath could change the whole dynamics of that 2-3 non-EU, injury to Johnny Sexton, obviously, refereeing decisions, bad weather, you know, knockout games in the end of it when they get there, presumably. But right now, they're playing a brand of rugby that nobody else is coming close to. Like they're brilliantly managed in terms of rotation and game management. They're very fresh. They're very hungry. They've got almost a new player in James Lowe at the European stage because Easton Nasebe's retired. They just have to play James Lowe now. And he's the most dynamic X-factor player in the competition. He's got a try-scoring record, second to none now, 16 and 18 games. And what I loved watching about them on the other night was that even when they were letting a few scores go in the first half, the way they just kept coming at Wasps, it's their straight lines of running. You know, there's just so little lateral running. They run straight and they've got decoy runners all over the place. I mean, for a defending player, it must be a nightmare to see this tide of blue swarming at you. And you just don't know which one to tackle. And eventually, the dam burst and, you know, Wasps are criticised for chucking in the towel in the last 20. I kind of felt a bit sorry for them because the way that the attacks that were just coming at them, and they just kept going for then, and kept, their confidence grew and the fans loved it. They're a joy to watch. I'd say it must be a joy to play in the team as well.
Well, Owen gave you a list there of the amazing things that they did, but he didn't mention the James Ryan line straight off a ruck.
And passed back inside across his body,
He twisted his body around to pass to Luke McGrath. Then a ruck was forming. That led to the Johnny Sexton under the legs, I think.
With Jack Conan stepping in scrum half. Nobody even noticed that, you know
Jack
what I mean?
Conan, yeah. But also with the Devon Toner loop play.
Yeah.
Tyke Furlong passing out to James Lowe. Just the exchange between forwards and backs. I think it's the best I've ever seen at provincial or club level.
Agreed. The best I've ever seen too.
They're all completely comfortable in every situation. And that makes the defence, they just don't know who to mark or in what way to mark them. There's no point setting yourself up for a big tackle with Tyke Furlong because he can dummy you. He might even run around you. He might run over you. The same goes for Luke McGrath's a scrum half, but he finishes chances. He busts people in the tackle. They're all-rounders. Like Tyke Furlong is seven great players piled into one body doing seven different jobs. It's ridiculous. Like their defences don't know what to do. Imagine being a defence coach in preparation in the week you're facing Leinster. What do you concentrate on?
Yeah, what do you concentrate on? Because if they had the win in the first half, Wasps, and after 20 minutes they hadn't been a bit of a lead, and Dai Young was interviewed midway through the first half, and he almost sounded resigned to defeat already.
Yeah.
You know, because you know you've got to build up a lead if you've got to win against Leinster, what might be coming at you in the second half. You're right, I thought Luke McGrath had one of his best games for Leinster. You know, his trailer, his support plays, his speed, the breakdown, moving the ball on. I can remember only one bad pass. Back row, you lose Dan leaving the warm up. No, we'll keep our line, world class line on the bench, and we'll just bring Reese Ruddock, who played like he was angry. You say I can't carry ball. You say Dan Levy's a better ball carrier than me. And he just went, you know, he was voracious in his appetite for ball carries and carried so hard. So as well as everything else, they've got the strength and depth, Simon. They've just got so many options, albeit that, you know, you have your four or five world-class players and, you know, Tyke Furlong, definitely world-class, Johnny Sexton. And I thought the centres were really good. I thought Robbie Henshaw and Gary Reynolds looked as good as they've ever done. And James Lowe, how did the All Blacks ever let him go, you know? And Jordan Larmour was almost just a little bit of varnish on the proceedings. And, he's got real X-factor as well. How do you stop the X factor they bring in broken play as well? They're a very complete attacking team. And I think the detail of their off the ball runs and so forth, and the detail, the precision of the moves, you'd have to attribute to some degree is partly the work of Felipe Contepomi. You know, that's the word apparently, is his attention to detail and the detail he brings to their moves. And their strike plays are exceptional as well.
How would you stop them though, James? It's easy for us to sit around here lauding how great they are. There are better teams than Wasps ready to have a shot through this competition. If you were sitting down this evening trying to work out a plan to take down Leinster, what's the number one priority there?
For me?
Yeah, well, for anybody.
Keep the ball. Yeah. You just got to keep the ball. I think the problem for
for Wasps, every time they had the ball, they gave it back to them within two or three phases. And their counter-attack, really, as Jerry was listing out the number of world-class players they have. I mean, I think Munster probably gave them their best game the week before by just keeping the ball, keeping it steady, keeping them in the scrums, keep them scrummaging, keep heavy runners running at Sexton and try and get into the channel between 9 and 10. But the problem is that, honestly, I would nearly go one further. I think I haven't watched them the other night. They're probably the best team in the world at the moment. They would beat absolutely anybody at the moment. I think their level is just that much bigger than everyone else. For me, if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to keep the ball. You're going to have to keep the ball, keep the ball, keep the ball, keep the ball, and try and wear them down.
Do you think the Toulouse result was a bad one for them, for Leinster?
I don't think they care, to be honest with you. They're playing that well. Toulouse are massive. They're big, strong men. They were trying to run Tecori down Johnny Chano, Kano behind them. They're probably they'll have Marchand coming around the corner, but they haven't been very good in the top 14. They've been very inconsistent. I think Leinster would be happy enough to go to Toulouse at the moment. The way they played at the weekend, they were just on a different planet to everybody else at the moment, to be fair. Yeah. As much as it sickens me to say it, but they are on a different level to everybody else at the moment.
I have a feeling, James, that if Leinster are in a winning position or a chance to strike for a win close to the end of the game, we won't see anybody doing what Freddie Burns did at the weekend. What did you make of that?
Look, you put the ball down when you get over the line. I feel sorry for Freddie Burns, but to be honest with you, I do feel sorry. I mean, we'll have all the keyboard warriors on there telling him how he should have been putting the ball down, he should have been putting the ball down. But look, it'll stick with him now forever. It'll be a YouTube clip, with no doubt.
I understand the not feet. When it happened, to be honest, I had no sympathy for him. I just thought it was so stupid. Maybe you have sympathy because the reaction goes too far the other way. And at this stage, I'm sure, in fact, in that second, I'm sure he realised what he had done was pretty stupid. I heard his brother, who plays for Ulster, saying like it's what he wouldn't have done it out of an ego trip. It was just relief having made the mistake, missed the kick to try to get over. But it's still just stupid. Even like the Teddy Thomas thing where he threw the ball to his teammate when he was already over the line for France, if you remember, last season. Like
it's for wrestling against Munster.
I'm sorry, for wrestling it was. Mistake. Yeah, anything that you do that even makes a 0.1% difference to the likelihood of scoring, I would have thought it's pretty easy for a coach not to allow.
James,
that to happen.
You were coached by Declan Kidney, and I'm sure I can only imagine what Declan would have thought of one of his players ever celebrating before Dotton does the ball down. I remember once Jamie Heaslip scoring a try for Ireland at Murrayfield when Declan was the coach, and I remember asking him about the try afterwards, and all Declan said, yeah, it was a good try when he'd put it down eventually.
Yeah. But it, I mean, what's the point? I mean, he's taking the kick after it. Even if he puts it down straight away, it's not a more difficult kick. He didn't even need to go under the post. I mean, it's 2 minutes from the end of the game. Put the ball down, get back and win the kickoff and get the hell out of there with a win. You know, he'll be slated. I mean, Decky would give out to you if you celebrated after a game sometimes, you know, because you didn't deserve to celebrate. So, you know what I mean? Like, it went down, probably we went the other way completely with it and not celebrating when we should have probably celebrated more, you know. But look, the first thing you do is when you get across the line, you put the ball down and then you worry about the kick after it. I mean, it's just bananas. It really is bananas at that level. It kind of is a bit like fellas not knowing the rules and they letting the ball go dead and then it costs them the game. It's just like, Christ, lads, you're professional rugby players. The first thing you do is learn the laws. I mean, when you get over the white line, you put the ball down and then you worry about the kick afterwards. Like, that's just the way it is. But look, as I said, you'll have plenty of YouTube fellas sending him messages during the week on Twitter or whatever it's saying, and he won't be forgetting it in a hurry. That's why you feel sorry for him, to be honest with you. Look, we make a mistake, everyone makes mistakes, but look, he'll be hammered for it. That's the world we live in now. He'll be hammered for it for a long time yet.
So. Yeah, I couldn't agree to you more. I think Dwyer is human, forgive divine and all that. I mean, I think it was a split second mistake. It wasn't, you know, keep this in perspective. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't, you know, he wasn't thought out in advance. It was just an instinctive thing. He's not, you know, he's not slating somebody else on social media under a pseudonym, putting nasty thought into it. You know what I mean?
You know what, Jerry, just watching it, rugby players used to celebrate a try at all. Mm. Like, you had to look almost grumpy and pissed off that you just scored a try.
Very serious,
they do
very
a little bit more thanks to the likes of Zeebo and Teddy Thomas and these guys. But I think it's when you hint at showing some ego, people really want to hammer you. Mm. Do not look like you think you're any good whatsoever. So the slightest celebration before a try is ego, and therefore you must be shunned.
Yeah, yeah. All this is true. Yeah, I suppose, yeah. But, like, I mean, who are the losers here? Bath, most obviously. Bath, their club, their players, their management, their coaching staff, and their supporters. But the biggest loser is Freddie Burns.
Well, you got sucked off straight after.
Yeah, I mean, nobody could imagine the place he was in last night and with his thoughts. Nobody would have swapped places with them. So, like I said, I do have some sympathy for him. Tell you one thing. A lot of players won't ever do that again. That was a good warning for a lot of young players not to do that.
Yeah.
It'll be done less.
Yeah, yeah, I'd imagine so. Ulster got a good win, obviously, James. A win they really had to get on the board. They're away now to Racing next. You might be in a position to talk about the kind of challenge that Racing are going to pose.
Yeah, I think Racing are going to have quality everywhere. I mean, they're going to be a tough win away in Scarlets. As you were saying, no shorts is just celebrating in that club. But I mean, I honestly was surprised Ulster won, because I watched them against Connacht, and they were god awful. They had no rhythm. They had no. There was no counter attack. There was nothing. I couldn't honestly see how they were going to win. So to get a win like they did, was great. And hopefully they'll breathe some confidence in with the fellas like Henderson and Best, kind of coming back into some bit of form, because they just look so far away from the players that were playing Six Nations or whatever and World Cups before that it just looked horrible the week before. Racing are just, you know, again, a massive team up front, front row of, I think Shanna is back playing this week, Donica will be playing. Fiji in second row as well. I can't think of his name, but he will be everywhere. We're looking for offloads, looking for balls out of contact. Casey Lolala does their skills with them, that play with Munster and Cardiff. Casey and Racing, obviously, but Casey will have the boys. They look for offloads. They look to flood channels. They look to really attack. Once there's one weak point in the defensive line, they'll go after to go after. Finn Russell has been really good. He's taken a lot of the workload. The nine, okay, Max, what's his name?
National.
That got injured. Finn Russell seems to have taken it on board, and he's attacking the line. He's going. He's looking for options inside, outside. Teddy Thomas, we know his quality. And they're just quality everywhere. To be fair, the stadium won't be rammed, but it'll feel like it is with the closed roof, and playing on a synthetic pitch will be new for Ulster as well. So there's lots, but you can't look past Racing looking for a bonus point victory at home against Ulster at the weekend, unfortunately.
Gerry, if Ulster's main job this season is to blood youngsters and sort of develop the squad, then Lowry was maybe the main talking point from the game. This is a 20-year-old on his second senior debut. He's 5'7". I don't know what he weighs, but he's normally an out-half playing a full-back. Made a mistake, bounced back and looked brilliant. Like a little Damien McKenzie.
Same
size as Damien McKenzie.
Yeah, I could see why you make the liking towards McKenzie. Probably be right-footed. It was a very ballsy call by Dan McFarland. You know, he could have gone Will Addison a fullback and Angus Curtis midfield or whatever, but he went for a 20-year-old, 5'7", academy player who started two games before this for his European Cup debut, having played 10 and 12 in his previous two starts. And is normally, you look up the website and it says out half come centre, and played him at fullback. Jordan Murphy in the Leicester think tank obviously looked at this, saw it was raining from the heavens in Belfast, and decided he had six up and unders directly down his throat in the first quarter of the game alone. One quite blatantly in the middle of the pitch from George Ford, 30-40 yards out. They just went after him, and he dropped one and led to 3 points from Ford of a scrum penalty, which is about Leicester's most potent attacking weapon of the match, their scrum penalties. But thereafter he did a brilliant support line for Will Addison's magnificent counter-attack from Peep. Addison looks a real player. He's going to be playing in November, you'd imagine. And was
delighted. You reckon, yeah?
Yeah, I think he's really good. I've been impressed with him every time and seen him actually play. I think his footwork, his strength, his balance. He can play in a variety of positions. Yeah, I think he was partly signed by Joe Schmidt, to be honest. And I think that Larry, more than vindicated selection, nearly got in for a try in the second half and ended the game with a try-saving tackle. So it was a very brave call by Dan McFarland, who said the one thing we can be sure about with Michael Michael Larry is that he's a very brave young man, and he's also a very gifted, talented young man. A colleague of mine in the Irish Times, John O'Sullivan, saying this guy could overtake a lot of young players in the out half pecking order in the next year or two. And that was him playing at fullback. So yeah, he's a real talent, and it's good to see young, small players as well. There was a few small players who did very well over the weekend in different games, which is good because rugby's meant to be a game for all sizes. Yeah, and I always thought Ulster would win that match, Simon, to be honest. Once I saw the team sheet, once I saw, you know, Best was playing the second game, Marcel Coates was back making his belated European debut, McCloskey was there, became increasingly influential in the game. So they're big heavy hitters, and the big game players generally delivered. McCloskey, like I said, got more influential as the game wore on, and John Cooney just switches from 9 to 10 effortlessly. You know, it's a great skill to have, a great weapon to have. Dave Shannon did well when he came on, and in the end, you know, they got that. I think they had a policy of just going to the corner all day long and turning down three-pointers. I think they had 10 attacking lineouts in the first half and just couldn't retain the possession. And if they turn one of those into a score, I think the sense of relief in the ground when Alan O'Connor finally plunged over the first try, yeah. The roar that came around me, there are some people here. It was a very subdued 13,000 Kingspan crowd and a lot of empty seats. And with that one bound, they were free. They nearly scored straight away afterwards, and confidence just restored. The noise levels went up and they started to get their lines of running right. They were clearing out quick, and they did a bit of a number on the Leicester Tigers pack. And by the end, you know, they really will probably be regretting privately that they actually didn't stick on a bonus point.
All right, looking forward to next week already. Jerry, thanks so much. James, thanks a million.
No problem, take care.
Cheers.
Surtout pas être pris hors-jeu, pas hors-jeu, pas hors-jeu. Tant pis, ça on s'est du terrain, mais pas hors-jeu.
Le drop, il arrive. Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Le drop.
C'est terrible. Terrible.
Jonathan Sexton à l'intérieur. On crucifie l'équipe de France.
Available for Murray. Moves it back there now towards CJ Stander. CJ Stander under pressure, but it's Ireland to have control of it. Midway between the French 22 and the 10-metre line. Sexton with the attempt to drop a goal. Both side the 22. Goes
towards the post. It's gone towards the post. It's over. Ireland with the drop of goal. It's gone between the posts. Let drop. The ball is gone. The fellas are just literally on top of each other. Away to the left hand side. France have been absolutely destroyed with the final kick of the game. A drop and goal. France have been robbed of victory. 82, 83 minutes gone. After Stade de France, the place has gone mad. Ireland have snatched it from the jaws of defeat.
Incroyable. Quel match winner, quel match winner.
Jonathan Sexton à la dernière seconde crucifie l'équipe de France. Que c'est dur, c'est terrible, terrible. Le drop de Jonathan Sexton. Oh, il s'en fout donc, il passe, c'est terrible, terrible.
Mike McGuckin tweeted in, can we safely assume Joe Brody talking out of his arse will be mentioned in the podcast today? Well, I hadn't actually intended to bring it up, Mike, but sure, why not? Mm. I always like to have something else to talk about at the end of a podcast.
I saw a tweet, no boundaries, no rules, violence is good, at Joe Brody 1993, has seen enough of the hashtag UFC to know that it's time to call a halt to the bloody freak shows and ban it for good. Read his column only in tomorrow's Sunday Independent, hashtag Zindo. I never thought I'd see the day when Joe would go in this hard on the Ulster Football Championship. But
that's some good work there, Ken.
There we go.
The time has come to call a halt to the UFC's bloody freak show. So he describes going downstairs in his house last Sunday morning to see if his 13-year-old son and his half dozen friends had gone to bed after watching the McGregor fight. It hadn't started yet, so I made some chili tea and sat down amongst them to watch it. The response of his son is not recorded here. In most situations, that would be, come on, Dad, just stay in bed for another couple of hours there. You know,
I'm having do us a favour here.
He sat down to watch it. Remind me of me own ma sitting there watching one of these McGregor fights, bitterly complaining about everything she was watching but unable to take her eyes off it.
So Joe Brody describes the brutality of a number of the fights. He compares them to a scene from Django Unchained, says the fighters are expected to behave like animals, calls for the UFC to be banned. What did you make of it? You did read the column in the end?
He let his imagination run a little bit riot, I would say, in the column. I mean, whatever, you know, it's just... apparently this violence packaged and sold by the UFC is unacceptable. Whereas the kind of violence that Joe Brody sometimes talks about when he's reminiscing about Ulster Gaelic football is fine. You know, like, and, you know, the lads go out and beat seven bells out of each other. You know, there was one that I saw a while back, you know, he's talking about Jose, you know, if Jose Mourinho tried to go into the Kilishal changing room after a Tyrone All County League game and asked him to keep it down, it wouldn't be milk he'd be hit with because they beat the bollocks off him. You know what I mean? When I hurled for Dungiven, Lavi were our hated rivals. Lavi. Liam Hinfey Sr., our bloodthirsty manager. Bloodthirsty, I assume, just in the kind of the good way as opposed to the bad way. Was one to describe
the UFC way, not the GA way.
Was one to describe them as the orange vermin. The orange vermin. Now, if that isn't a racial, religious, ethnic slur, I'm not quite sure what it is, because he also complains about the you know, McGregor, Khabib stuff from that angle or whatever. The orange vermin are sweeping over the Glen Chain this Sunday. Let us embrace them warmly, gentlemen. Hostilities generally commenced in the corridor between the changing rooms, with Hinfey fond of leaving the Dungiven door open, braiding the Laffy players as they arrived. Look at that cowardly bastard, or I never knew shite could stand so high, Downey. Or smell a shite off your da isn't one of the things. Blah, 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 blah. Colley, who played as though he were the biggest, baddest man on the planet, swung hard across McGilligan's knees, calling the big man to roar like a bull and hobble around. Violence, you know. When the next ball came in, McGilligan drove across his waist, breaking Colley's hand. Colley, who was too small to roar, yelped and went to the sideline, where his stricken hand was wrapped in tape. A minute or so later, he was back welting McGilligan, etc., etc. Joe Brody lobs the keeper. As he's getting off the ground, I tussled his hair and said something along the lines of, "You should have stayed on your feet there, son. That was embarrassing." At which point, I got an almighty blow on the nose from the cornerback, knocking me backwards. The blood came scooting out of my nose. For the first and only time, I saw stars. As I tottered about in front of my attacker, Wee Pete came in and beat the face off him, fists going in a blur. "I should have warned you about your man, Joe. He has anger issues," said Dara O'Kaneja. Afterwards, blah, blah, blood, etc., etc. I played with St. Bridges. That day, 50 years ago, they battered the Rossa men from the throw-in, coming in late with knees and elbows up, hitting them off the ball and starting fist fights all over the field. Their supporters joined in, striking the Rossa men from behind. And that was 50 years ago. It's a tradition that continues unbroken to this day, as we know. The late Toby, blah, blah, the Rossa lads retreated to the dressing room and urgently discussed abandoning the game and going home while the going was good. This is after they've been beaten up by the supporters and so on. The late Toby Shannon, the great Rossa national player, had a better idea. Toby, who was in the old IRA, fished around in his bag for a moment and produced a Webley revolver. "Give me a minute, lads," he said as he disappeared out the door. He went into the Rusharkin dressing room, fired a shot into the ceiling and said, "Any more of that in the second half and the next one won't be going in the ceiling." Order was restored and Ross went on to win the game. Suffice to say, the losing manager did not appear at the post-match press conference. But, you know, this is cute and communitarian. Unlike the, you know, violent and barbaric pornography.
Well, he seemed to be particularly put out at the way the commentary went down. You know, they said, these guys aren't just bleeding over each other, they're bleeding all over us.
Someone should have whipped out a Webley revolver and, you know,
that definitely would have eased tensions last week, all right?
I mean, whatever, you know, like, pull the other one. But seriously, the, yeah, it's, you know, whatever. There's violence all over the shop in all kinds of UFC acronyms or organizations, as we can see here. It all depends, I suppose, on whether you're well disposed towards it or not to begin with.
The news came in over the weekend that the broadcaster Peter Brackley has died. Brackley covered a bunch of World Cups and Euro Championships. He was also the voice of the Jimmy Greaves spitting image puppet, which I did not know.
Wow.
Provided the commentary for Pro Evo Soccer. Some would say the greatest football computer game of all time. I would say the greatest computer football game of all time.
I'm a sensible soccer man. I always have been on.
But most famously, if you were watching Italian football on TV in the 90s, as many of us were, he was Channel 4's brilliant Serie A commentator. Like, this would have been a fairly typical Peter Brackley call on a Sunday afternoon back then if you were watching Channel 4.
Battistuta. Now Rui Costa. Such intelligent distribution then. Carnacioli. Battistuta. Is this going to be number two? What a strike by Gabriel Battistuta.
Bloody good team, that Fiorentina side of, yeah. Batty goal and Rui Costa.
Oh, he was so good.
And the likes of that. But do you remember that goal, by any chance? That's the one where
he kind of takes a touch and then smashes it from outside the box.
Yeah.
Into the, yeah.
Even by Batistuta standards, he fairly rifled it through the goalkeeper.
That's the highest standard in Thunder Bastards going, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's a serious. Remember. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You never have to worry too much about. I wouldn't say any of Batistuta's goals went anywhere near a corner of a goal.
No. You'd no interest around in the middle.
Yeah.
In off the post, no interest.
Do you remember the goal?
Off the crossbar, maybe.
The old one Trafford, off the crossbar, yeah. He scored a great one.
Yes. Against Arsenal at Wembley, the old Wembley.
Well, that one's in the corner, all right.
Did it?
But, didn't it?
I just remember it flying at
extreme It was from an
impossible
angle.
Yeah.
And he just hammered it into the roof of the net over poor old David Seaman.
I thought that might get a bit of the nostalgia going.
Did you see Martin O'Neill?
I saw just before we did, I just want to give a hat tip to Adam Brandon for putting that clip up today. And that was Peter Brackley, of course, on commentary, the late Peter Brackley. Yes, Ken, sorry, Martin O'Neill.
Yeah, he since we did to record the football podcast, sorry, he's done his press conference ahead of tomorrow's Nations League game against Wales. The Nations League keeps coming thick and fast. It's interesting that he seems to think that... Well, he said, we played a very attacking side against Denmark the other night. The two wing-backs who like to get forward, and Jeff, who plays in that role for Burnley off Shane Long. It's remarkable. You know, I think that's an attacking team. It seemed like a real defensive team to me. I mean, he's talking about Hendrick. Hendrick's like a midfield player, you know? To use him as your sort of second striker is quite defensive, I think, you know?
Yeah, but I wonder...
There's no wingers.
Are we guilty sometimes in these cases
one
of
striker
taking what the manager says as to be actually what he thinks?
Whereas
maybe what he's thinking is, come on, guys, I had to get a nil-all draw. I could not afford to lose that game. It was quite defensive. But that doesn't necessarily create a very positive message, so it's easier for manager to finesse it a bit.
You are, I think, probably correct.
I'm both cynical and correct.
Yeah. He says, we've got to try and be more creative if we can be. We've got to try and use the ball in the final third, be confident. We're playing at home. We need to get on the front foot as quickly as possible and try and dictate the game.
He's been saying that for a while.
Doesn't always work out like that. Sometimes exceptionally talented players in the opposition can force you back.
Thankfully, they're all injured in the Wales team.
Ramsey, Bale, Ampadu, Mepham. Lots of Welsh players out. Ledley. He talked about McLean. The McLean thing is sort of an interesting one in the sense that he played left wing back, which obviously isn't really his position, but I kind of feel like it should be his position.
Oh, I would have thought that role was... I've seen it said by a few people that it doesn't suit him, but I would have thought it was designed for him.
Mm.
A strong running player loves getting up and down the line, happy to tackle, but also wants to score goals and create.
Yeah, I think it's in theory should be a good match with his skill set. Of course, there's a couple of things that you also would have ideally if you're going to be a wing back, which maybe McLean would have to work on. One of them being positional sense, because you do have to be aware of where you are in relation to your defense. I mean, you are kind of part of the defense, so you need to have a good sort of tactical understanding of when to go and when to be back. Also, the thing that McLean, you know, really, I think, needs to work on, I despair of him ever doing this, because it's just been the same his whole career. And it's equally useful, I think, for a player in every position on the field, not just theoretically left wing back, but just don't give away a foul every time you tackle the opponent. You know, it's just, it's so frustrating to watch. Like, do not run into... Pressing is great. Get up, get in the face of the opponent, try and get the ball off them. Absolutely. But don't foul them, because there's just no point in doing it if you foul them. It's just not no point. I mean, there are a couple of situations in which, yeah, a foul, fair enough. You take a tactical foul, you take a yellow card.
Or
whatever.
You put down a marker, Keane Overmars, and so on.
Put down a marker is just is primitive thinking again. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to put down... like. You're going to get sent off, you know?
Also, I don't think you're Christian Eriksen's or Gareth Bale's. No,
they're not bothered. It's
just
a sign.
Worried about markers being put down.
It's a sign of your inferiority, you know what I mean? If you're going to try and kick me off the field, well, you know, it's a sign of you can't win the football. So, I mean, sometimes it works. He did it to Milik, you know, obviously the Polish striker. Oh, yeah. He didn't play for a few weeks after tangling with McLean in that qualifier here. a couple of years back. But I do see it, and it was again the other night. McLean is really energetic and wants to get the ball, so he's got a lot of ingredients of a player who should be really good at pressing, but too often just runs in and kicks through the opponent. You're like, well, great. Now they've got the ball and they've got space and they can decide what to do with it and they get a little breather and we've lost whatever momentum we had. So can you please stop doing this? Can you please just stop? It's such a basic thing, you know?
I hear you, Ken. I hear you.
So that's the concern I would have about McLean in that position, is that you give away free kicks too close to your penalty area. You know, if he's back in those sorts of positions, making the type of robust challenges that he likes to make, they're going to get free kicks in dangerous situations. That's a problem. I wouldn't really worry, though, about people seem to say, well, does it inhibit him a little bit? You know, this obviously when you're playing as a wing back and you have sort of defensive responsibilities, it does mean that you can't attack maybe quite as much as you'd like to if you were a winger and didn't, or playing off the front as he has done for Ireland. And people will look at it and say, well, if you look over the last few games, he's actually one of our most regular goal scorers. He's still not really a regular goal scorer, but he has scored a few goals.
But he had the purple patch up to the Wales game, yeah.
Yeah. And so people may be concerned that we're missing that if he's in the left wing back position. But I wouldn't worry about that. I think it would be great if he tried to. The problem is that at club level, it's how's he going to really work on this? It's not like he's playing for a team that's going to use it very, you know, mostly you're not going to be using this. That position usually doesn't exist in whatever teams he's playing for. But in theory, him for Ireland, yeah, could as good as our other options in that position, I would say.
We'll troop on to down the road to Lands End Road tomorrow, Ken, and breathlessly report on what takes place on the show on Wednesday.
Are you going tomorrow?
I am, yeah.
Oh, good stuff. You were there on Saturday, of course you were.
Yeah, I mentioned in the football podcast. Yeah. There seemed to be a lot of, I think I'm getting this, I think it's a half price ticket on Tuesday.
Mm.
It ended up being a free ticket for the game on Saturday. Yeah. Seemed to be one of we're in an era where tickets sort of start floating about that you can kind of, you know.
It's a lukewarm ticket. It's not a hot ticket.
It's not a hot ticket, no.
Well,
no.
Yeah, I do think...
in fact, it might do with another 30 seconds in the microwave.
I remember when I arrived at the game, I was looking around the stadium. I thought, my God, this doesn't look too good. This is like a Carling Cup crowd. Remember, you know, the 2011 Carling Cup when we played like Northern... I thought, God, this isn't great. But then in the last 5 minutes before kickoff, the place dramatically filled up. I mean, the FAI announced the figure of 41,000 or something, which...
Yeah, they all do. They all announced the top line figure. You know, I got a lot of associations and so on do that.
Yeah, I mean...
People know it's not that many actual bums on seats.
Yeah, it didn't look like that many, but it was still actually a bigger crowd than I had expected, you know, given how sort of bad everything is. So I don't know what percentage of... What the average percentage of ticket price was paid for by the person who... by somebody who showed up at the game. I don't know the answer to that question. But just goes to show, you know, we still love
the boys in green.
You know, even when maybe not that much can be expected, we still go and have more than hope than expectation.
We sure do. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks for listening. Karen. Talk to you tomorrow.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off. Never go home, they never go home, they never go home, those boys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.